third canto, third chapter, text number 25, right? 25. Tatah katipayair masair Vrishni bhojanda kadayah Yayu prabhasam samhrishta Stair deva vimohitaha Ratair deva vimohitaha Tatah katipayair masai Vrishni bhojandhakadayah Yayu prabhasam samhrishta Rathair deva vimohitah Tatah katipayair masair Vrishni bhojandhakadayah So when you say Bhoja and Bhojandhakadayaha Bhojandhakadayaha Yayu prabhasam samhrishta Rathair deva vimohitaha Krishna Prabhupada by His Divine Grace is a Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada Srila Prabhupada ki A few months passed and then bewildered by Krishna, all the descendants of Vrishni, Bhoja and Andhaka, who were incarnations of demigods, went to Prabhasa, while those who were eternal devotees of the Lord did not leave but remained in Dwaraka. Text number 26. After arriving there, text number 26 goes like this. Tatrasnatva pitrun devan rishim chaiva tarambhasa tarpayitvata viprebhyo gavo bahugunadaduhu. After arriving there, all of them took bath and with the water of this place of pilgrimage, they offered their respects to the forefathers, demigods and great sages and thus satisfied them. They gave cows to the brahmanas in royal charity. Purport by His Divine Grace is the Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada ki. Amongst the devotees of the Lord, there are several divisions, mainly Nitya Siddhas and Sadhana Siddhas. The Nitya Siddha devotees never fall down to the region of the material atmosphere, even though they sometimes come onto the material plane to execute the mission of the Lord. The sadhana siddha devotees are chosen from the conditioned souls. Out of the sadhana devotees, there are mixed and pure devotees. The mixed devotees are sometimes enthusiastic about furtive activities and are habituated to philosophical speculation. The pure devotees are free from all these mixtures and are completely absorbed in the service of the Lord. Regardless of how and where they are situated. Pure devotees of the Lord are not enthusiastic to put aside their service to the Lord in order to go visit holy places of pilgrimage. A great devotee of the Lord in modern times, Sri Narottama Das Thakur, has sung like this, to visit holy places of pilgrimage is another bewilderment of the mind. Because devotion service to the Lord at any place is the last word in spiritual perfection. For pure devotees of the Lord, who are completely satisfied with the transcendental loving service of the Lord, there is hardly any necessity to visit the various places of pilgrimage. But those who are not so advanced have the prescribed duties of visiting pilgrimage sites and regularly performing the rituals. The part of the princely order of Vedur dynasty who went to Prabhasa performed all duties to be done in a place of pilgrimage and offer their pious actions to their forefathers and others. As a rule, every human being is indebted to God, the demigods, great sages and other living entities, people in general, forefathers, etc., for various contributions received from them. Thus, everyone is obliged to repay the debt of gratitude. The Yadus who went to the Prabhasa pilgrimage site performed their duties by distributing land, gold and well-nourished cows in royal charity, as described in the following verse. Om Ajnanate Mirandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshuvan Melitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. Sitting there, all of them took bath, and with the water of this place of pilgrimage, they offered their respects to the forefathers, demigods and great sages, and thus satisfied them. They gave cows to the Brahmanas in royal charity. So we are reading from this chapter, and Lord's pastimes out of Vrindavan. So in these two verses, it says, the eternal devotees of the Lord did not leave Dwaraka. They remained there. And those who were demigods, who had incarnated in Dwaraka to assist in the Lord's pastimes, they were the ones who left Dwaraka and went to Prabhasa for performing the rituals and rites. Specifically, this differentiation is made here. We see here why. Because there is a differentiation made between the advanced eternal associates of the Lord, Nitya Siddhas. They have full faith in Krishna and they are not eager to perform this kind of rituals and rites by visiting some pilgrimage places. It says, while the others were performing the rituals and rites. So Prabhupada says a highlight point here in the purport. First few sentences he explains about the three types of devotees. Nitya Siddhas, Sadhana Siddhas and Kripa Siddhas. So Kripa Siddha devotee is one who gets the mercy of the Lord or his pure devotee and swiftly makes advancement within a very short time. It's a Kripa Siddha. And Sadhana Siddha devotees are those who execute the regulative principles of 64 principles given by Rupa Goswami. And then gradually they purify their heart and they also attain a very exalted status. And the Nitya Siddhas devotees, they are ever liberated. In fact, they never appear in this world at all unless they have some purpose to be fulfilled by the Lord's instruction. Otherwise, they don't come here at all. Then the Siddhas. So Prabhupada explains about them in the beginning. And then he goes on to say that the mixed devotees are sometimes enthusiastic about fruitive activities and are habituated to philosophical speculation. So before we go on to that point, we could speak a little bit on these three types of siddhas. Oftentimes, disciples of Srila Prabhupada were eager to know about the position of Srila Prabhupada from the spiritual world, especially in the early days. So one very prominent disciple of Prabhupada, whose name I would not like to mention, he wrote a letter to Prabhupada at one time, asking whether Prabhupada was a Nitya Siddha or he was a Sadhana Siddha. And he also asked in that letter, who were you in your previous life? Were you materially conditioned? And then you also performed sadhana and became a pure devotee. So he had inquired, a disciple wrote to Prabhupada like this. So in reply, Prabhupada wrote to him saying about these three types of different siddhas, Nitya Siddha, Sadhana Siddha and Kripa Siddha and all. And then Prabhupada said, As far as the Narada boy is concerned, Narada Muni is concerned, in his previous life he was son of a maid servant. And he was born in a very, very simple family, an ordinary family. And he got the kripa of the Bhaktivedantas. And he rendered service to them, he took the remnants, and he heard the Krishna Katha, and he became purified. And then in the next life he became Narada, the great sage. And then Narada became a spiritual master of so many great personalities. Now Prabhupada asked him the question, now is Narada not qualified to be a spiritual master of so many great personalities, despite being born as a son of a maid servant in the previous life? So once you qualify to become a pure devotee, then one is fit to be a spiritual master of the whole world. One should not see one's previous background. And Prabhupada asked, I do not know why you are asking me about my previous life. And Prabhupada said, I have heard from one astrologer that in my previous life I was a physician. And my life was completely sinless. And because of that type of lifestyle, I had the advantage of being born in a Shuchi or a Srimat, in a Brahmana family or in an aristocratic family. I got both these advantages in my life. I was born in a higher class family, and I was born in a rich family, like the Mallik family. I took birth there. And although I had my relatives were quite wealthy, and I had a lot of money, and I had a chance to break any of the sinful principles, I did not know even what is meat eating, gambling, intoxication, illicit sex in my life at all. I have never, these things never even crossed my mind. I lived a life like that, he says. And then Prabhupada said, the deity in our home, the temple, the Radha Govind temple, Radha Govind, it is Mallik family deity, the deity called me to come and greet him and take his darshan. And by his mercy, I became attracted to devotion service. And in my life, I cannot think of a moment when I ever forgot Krishna, even for one moment, Prabhupada wrote like that. And by Krishna's mercy, in this way I could come to the West and propagate devotion service on the order of my spiritual master. And like this Prabhupada wrote. So the devotee who wrote this letter to Prabhupada, he got the reply and he was a bit shocked whether I have disturbed the heart of my spiritual master by asking such a question. Was it an offensive question? But then he understood Prabhupada, as a dutiful guru, had to ascertain his position. Prabhupada was undoubtedly humble in front of his disciples, in front of everybody. But when the occasion warranted, he was he never compromised on ascertaining his spiritual position. Because for the disciple, it is very important to have full confidence and full faith in the spiritual master. Otherwise, it is not possible for a disciple to give up the material attachments of this world and uplift one's consciousness to go back home, back to Godhead. It is not possible unless a disciple has full confidence in the Guru. In fact, the faith of the disciple in the sublime spiritual truths, what the Guru is teaching, that will come by the faith of the disciple in the Guru itself. Because if the disciple thinks Guru is not so advanced, or Guru is foolish, or his understanding is not very profound, or it's not very deep, and I know better, I am a better scholar, or I am more learned, and I have more vast knowledge, this kind of thinking will stunt the disciple from making spiritual progress. A disciple should know, Guru, when we talk about knowledge of Guru, what is the meaning of Guru being knowledgeable? Once Prabhupada was asked by another disciple, whether Guru is always perfect, whether our Guru can also have some imperfections. So why the disciple asked the question, Prabhupada will sometimes spell a verse apparently wrongly. Janma karma chame divyam evam yo janati tattvatah. Prabhupada may say like that. You immediately say, Prabhupada, I will tell you the correct verse. Evam yo veti tattvatah. Actually, veti and janati are same only. Veti means janati. But then Prabhupada may say like that sometimes. And disciple will say, disciple may think that, you know, Prabhupada doesn't know the verse, probably. So, disciple may think that Swamiji is, you know, mispronouncing the verse or he doesn't know it. So, the disciple was asking a question to Prabhupada, can a guru be imperfect? Can a guru commit mistakes? Prabhupada said, a guru can never be imperfect. In what sense? Because his purpose is to please Krishna. In his sincerity to please Krishna, he can never be wrong. And he will never teach you any wrong things. He will teach you the pure things as he gets in parampara. Then the disciple asked the question, does Guru know everything about everyone? And then the disciple asked the question, can a Guru say how many windows are there in Empire State Building? Because there are thousands of windows. There are big palaces and houses which have plenty of windows. So Prabhupada said, this is like asking how many droplets of water are there in a mirage. Because the whole material world with all its presentation of truth is nothing but illusion. So a guru is not expected to know all the different fields of material science or material knowledge. You can't ask Guru, can you tell me this mathematical formula? Do you know history? Do you know geography? Do you know science? Do you know information technology? Does Guru know everything? Guru knows the principle behind everything. And Guru can very easily, sum up and understand the intention of any jiva behind his activities. So Prabhupada said, Guru is not expected to know each and every material knowledge. But Guru knows the spiritual knowledge. He knows the purpose of Krishna in this world, what Krishna gives in the Shastra. That was one thing Prabhupada said. Another thing he said, Guru knows about every one of his disciples as much as he needs to know. That knowledge is applied by super soul within his heart, who is also in the heart of the disciple. So the super soul exactly provides. Sometimes I have seen any guru in ISKCON, they may call a disciple and say, you don't seem to be happy. When I look at your face, you seem to be preoccupied with something. And you don't appear happy in spiritual life. How do they know it? Because super soul is giving them some indication. Super soul gives a signal that this fellow is suffering now. He needs guidance, he needs help. So, Guru supplied knowledge, because Krishna is called as Dhyampati. He is called as Dhyampati, means he is the master of everyone's intelligence. So he supplies intelligence. Mattasmitari jnanam apohanam cha. He gives the jnanam to Guru. Tadami buddhi yogam tam. Krishna says all these things. So he supplies the intelligence to Guru. So Prabhupada said, in that sense Guru is always perfect. But you may pin down a Guru saying that, my Guru doesn't know about this material thing, that material thing. And Guru knows how to, just like the boatman and scientist story, isn't it? Guru knows how to deliver us from the material world to spiritual world, which is the most important knowledge. And all the other petty material knowledge of this world, he doesn't need to know. Of course, Guru has a very deep knowledge about Krishna and the Shastras, because you will see knowledge and faith, these two things are instrumental in offering us the Krishna conscious advancement. So the more the knowledge of Krishna's nature, Krishna's characteristics, Krishna's pastimes, similar type of knowledge given in the Shastra about Krishna, a guru certainly cultivates that type of knowledge, which is very anukul for going back to Godhead and for and for watering the tender creeper of devotional service and nourishing it and enhancing our Krishna avesh or Krishna prem. Certainly Guru is interested in that type of knowledge, and he cultivates himself and he is happy in distributing it to others also. So Srila Prabhupada is undoubtedly a Nitya Siddha. There is no doubt about it. Because one time in his talk with one of the disciples, Prabhupada said, I was afraid of sannyas because I was not very confident whether I can perform the austerities of sannyas. That doesn't mean Prabhupada was fearful or something. Prabhupada was actually very qualified to take sannyas. But out of his humility, he says, I was fearful. That is why one should not misunderstand. Unless we have love for such an acharya, we cannot understand the intention behind what he is saying. In fact, when Prabhupada took sannyas, he became one of the best disciples of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, Thakur. And he fulfilled his mission. And Prabhupada says, I told Krishna that I am so happy in the spiritual world. Why do you ask me to go to material world? But then Krishna said, no, everything will be all right with you. Please go to the material world and bring, reclaim all the suffering souls and bring them back to me. So Krishna ordered me, so I came, Prabhupada says. So this is not the only instance. There are a few instances like this we can quote when Prabhupada reveals his connection with Krishna in the spiritual world. And great acharyas like Prabhupada have no reason to tell lies, because the conditioned souls in this world are very acclimatized or accustomed to telling lies. That's very common with conditioned souls. Why do we tell lies? Because we want to show off. We want to impress somebody. But pure acharyas, they have no reason to tell anyone any lies at all. They don't boast about themselves, nor are they eager to promote themselves. They are thoroughly honest. Sadhava. Sadhava means thoroughly honest. They never cheat anyone. Because of that, we can know that whatever he says is true. Krishna has requested him to come to the material world. Although he's a Nitya Siddha, Krishna is telling him, please go and bring the souls back. And understand like that. So, if you read this book, Prabhupada Appreciation, in one of the chapters, Satsukadas Maharaj elaborately explains on how Prabhupada is not only a Nitya Siddha, he is also a Shaktyavesh avatar. Shaktyavesh avatar means a very specially empowered jiva, not like any other ordinary jiva. The Nityananda avesh, it descends in the heart of a very pure soul on the wish of Krishna. When Krishna desires, let this jiva be empowered with this shakti, just like Nakula Brahmachari was empowered with the shakti of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He was delivering millions of souls because that special mercy descended on him. Similarly, Prabhupada also was invested with the Nityananda Avesh potency, by which he could go to the West and do a miracle which is humanly considered impossible. So, sometimes Prabhupada's disciples, they doubted about their Swamiji because of the neophyteness. Swamiji is getting pain in the heart, or Swamiji is getting sickness. How can a Nitya Siddha devotee get sickness? This was the question of Brahmananda Prabhu at one time. So he wrote a letter to Prabhupada that Swamiji, how is it that Maya is able to give you suffering? You have a spiritual body. We have heard that pure devotee has a spiritual body. How can a spiritual body suffer? We should know, if a spiritual body of a great personality is suffering, there could be innumerable reasons. Prabhupada explained to disciples that when the disciples break the regulative principles, the guru can suffer. One reason is that. Also, the suffering of a Vaishnava is a creation of Krishna. It's a creation of Krishna. Because the disciples get a chance to serve the guru, because the guru depends on the disciples for being taken care of. In the last days when Prabhupada was in the bed, disciple served him just like a mother or father would serve a baby, child. And such a dependence of Prabhupada on the disciples increased the love of the disciples infinitely towards Prabhupada. So sometimes Krishna makes such an arrangement. Also, when a guru suffers, how he is Krishna conscious, even during sickness, Krishna wants to show the world. Prabhupada was so Krishna conscious even in the hospital. In fact, when Prabhupada was lying in the bed, many devotees would come bringing prasadam, to meet Prabhupada, offer obeisances, and their behavior was seen quite, out of the world. It was not like the normal people. The nurses and the doctors, they would be watching. These people are coming and bowing down, they are offering obeisances, they are standing up, giving some prasad, talking to Prabhupada and going back, and they became a bit curious. And one nurse asked Prabhupada, Swamiji, I heard that in India they have this different classes of people. What is the highest class of people in India called as? She asked. And Prabhupada said, they are called Krishna conscious. She was looking for the word Brahmana. Prabhupada knew if I say Brahmana, she will argue. Brahman, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Shudra, she will get into unnecessary loop. Prabhupada said, they are called Krishna conscious. He said. So Prabhupada was always cheerful. Even when he was in the hospital, he told the devotees, put a big picture of Narasimhadev right in front of me. So every time he would get up and he would offer obeisances to Narasimhadev. Devotees say that Prabhupada was watching Narasimhadev as if he was seeing him face to face. So all devotees get a chance to see how a great Vaishnava guru deals with such kind of situations. When he is put into sickness, how he continues to love Krishna in all sorts of difficult circumstances also. Or how his love for Krishna is uninterrupted. It is apratihata. Even in sickness, one gets to see. Actually, for a Vaishnava, it is immaterial. You send him to hell, you send him to heaven, you give him sickness, you give him, good health. You make him a millionaire, you make him a pauper. You make him success, you make him failure. You put him on the stage and garland him. You leave him in the midst of the masses as an insignificant person. For a Vaishnava, these are immaterial. For a Vaishnava, what is most important is his connection with Krishna and his chance for rendering some devotional service to Krishna. That's all. So, that is how Krishna gives opportunity for devotees to see Vaishnava in different perspective, in different situations. And then Prabhupada says, the mixed devotees are sometimes enthusiastic about fruitive activities and are habituated to philosophical speculation. This is jnana karmadi anavritam, which is explained in that verse of pure devotion service. So, jnana or knowledge, like we say, this verse, bahunam janmanamante jnanavan mam prapadyate. If my endeavor for knowledge takes me round and round, and at last it brings me to the point, Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vasudeva Sarvamiti. Or Krishna is the cause of all causes, and surrendering to Krishna is the goal of life, sarvadharman parityaja, then that knowledge is considered perfect. But if the knowledge which I am acquiring simply makes me proud of my scholarship, or if that knowledge is taking me to some wrong conclusion of voidism or impersonalism, then that knowledge is considered pratikul, very unfavorable and useless, good for nothing. That type of knowledge is actually condemned. That's why he says, jnana karmadi anavritam. He says, that knowledge is very dangerous. And also, sometimes we acquire knowledge of so many books, so many subjects in the name of preaching. Like one devotee was trying to go through many video clippings and some slideshows from the material circles. Because sometimes the materialistic people produce nice video clips. Sometimes they produce some PowerPoint shows. So this devotee was thinking, it will be nice for me to collect them and use them in preaching to new people. Because new people always ask for new things. isn't it? They are not happy with something very shastric. So in the course of collecting it, gradually he saw his intelligence deteriorating, degrading. Because you see the videos produced by the materialistic people have so much rubbish. So he is accumulating, similarly people accumulate knowledge. There was one gentleman who was reading the Stephen Covey, Seven Habits of Highly Effective People. Then he went to Covey Institute to attend some seminars to learn how to manage ISKCON temple or ISKCON community. But in the course of that, he became more and more interested in Stephen Covey, not in the Adi Kavi Brahma. You know, Adi Kavi Brahma has given Bhagavatam. But he loved the original Kavi. What that was? Tene Brahma Hridaya Adi Kavi. So he loved the Adi Kavi and started taking shelter of Stephen Covey. And the result was, after a few years, slowly, you know, his Kantimala, three round Kantimala became one single mala, went inside. And the dhoti kurta changed into pant and shirt. Not only he got married and settled, he slowly moved from ISKCON to Stephen Covey Institute. And he started giving seminars in companies. He became very impressed with Covey, that he became one of the Covey Institute, you know, seminar presenters. That's all. He had nothing to give and take with ISKCON after that. So this is an example of how the knowledge can cover devotional service. So our endeavor for knowledge should not cover our devotional service. We have to ask ourselves, I am reading some management books or scientific books, is it covering my devotional service or is it keeping my devotional service intact? The tender feelings for Guru and Krishna and the Parampara and Vaishnavas that we are having, that is like a very tender creeper. We have to keep watering it and growing it and making it stout and stronger. But any other type of acquisition of knowledge is dangerous. One thing is that the knowledge can distract us. Another thing is the knowledge can make us proud. I know something which nobody knows. That kind of false pride, which is very dangerous. Because knowledge leads to pride, isn't it? Especially material knowledge. But ideally speaking, the knowledge of the Shastra makes one humble. Vidya Vinayana Shobate, it is said. Just like a tree laden with fruits always bends down. Similarly, the more one reads Shastra, one feels, I'm a fallen soul, we feel like that. The more the knowledge of the scriptures dawns in our heart, we feel ourselves insignificant and useless. That's the nature of spiritual knowledge. And that is why in the 20 items of process of acquiring knowledge in the 13.8-12, the first thing Krishna says, Amanitvam, Adambitvam, he says that. All those are knowledge items. But the first item he says is Amanitvam, he says. So, knowledge can be dangerous if it leads to pride. Knowledge can be dangerous if it is distracting us from the devotional knowledge to Krishna. Because Krishna is the target of pure devotion. If Krishna is forgotten and one is doing something else, it's simply foolishness. So, also many devotees are in the process of collecting stories and examples from different books. We have to be very careful. Like there was one servant of His Holiness Satchidas Maharaj, whom Maharaj had deputed to assist him in preparing a book called as Vedic, what is that book? Not cosmology, What is that? Not Vedic wisdom. Readings in Vedic literature, So for that, Maharaj wanted many information from Upanishads and Vedas and Puranas and, you know, many things. And he wanted that servant to go to the internet, Google search, you know, and go to different libraries and bring books on Advaita, Dvaita Advaita, Shuddha Advaita, all kinds of Vishishta Advaita, different books. So that servant of Maharaj who was serving, collecting this literature, one time he was reading all these things and he got a bit confused. He became a little disillusioned. And when Maharaj observed that he is becoming bewildered in his spiritual life, he told him to stop that. He said, enough of it now. You just read Prabhupada's books now, peacefully chant and advance in your devotional life. So one loses one's devotional tendencies and one becomes bewildered by reading too many books like that. That jnana is considered to be this thing, unfavorable, pratikul. Another thing he says here is, the mixed devotees are sometimes enthusiastic about fruitive activities. So fruitive activities is karma. One should not do any fruitive activities that also distracts a person. Just like, one example is, you know, going for astrology. Like, you know, whenever a person faces some failure, one of the things they do is to go to your astrologer and show the chart. Please tell me, am I suffering from Shani or something? If Shani is chasing me or if Rahu is looking at me, you know, can you turn his direction or something, you know? Or should I wear some, you know, Neelamani or, you know, different kinds of things in my hand or neck or anything. People try different things. And even Srila Prabhupada used to use a little bit of astrology. For example, on Thursdays, one should not travel long distances for programs or anything. Generally, Prabhupada would not keep any program of going out on Thursday for travel or pravas and travel. He would not keep. But if you got a good chance to preach somewhere, hell with any day. He would go for preaching. He would not compromise. So that means, you know, his devotional service is not covered by his karma tendencies. Given a chance, if somebody tells Swamiji, can you come on Thursday or Friday for a program, he may say Friday. But if you say, Swamiji, Friday only 10 people will come. If you come on Thursday, 100 will come. Okay, I'll come on Thursday. So we have to be sure. Going for this astrology and all these things, sometimes, you know, we depend more on astrology, more on destiny than on Krishna. Then that surrender to Krishna is gone. Then where is our affection for Krishna? Where is our faith in Krishna? Just like the Vajavasis were told by Krishna, you close your eyes, I will make sure all this fire is gone. They all close their eyes. And then Krishna sucked the fire completely. So that type of faith is needed in Krishna. So sometimes you go to South India, you find in some temples, their deity worship is too elaborate sometimes. So much so, there is no time for Sankirtan at all. Even sometimes in ISKCON temple, sometimes in certain parts of the country you find that, you know, they are very, it is, in English you call it as dotting the I's and crossing the teeth, we call it. Extremely meticulous in worshipping the deity with, you know, wearing the purest dress and, yes, we have to do Abhishek, we have to worship the deity. But Jiva Goswami says that it should be done along with chanting of the holy name. Otherwise, deity worship without the chanting of the holy name is not acceptable by Krishna, especially in this age of Kali Yuga. Sometimes, for example, you have a festival, some festival. The program is between 6 to 9. In that, you know, 2 hours, 2.5 hours goes in the deity related activities. And then, you know, the Sankirtan is 10 minutes and then the class is 5 minutes or something. Like that. So that is the overemphasis on karma also. And without understanding the emphasis that is to be laid on Sankirtan. Similarly, you will find people who are intellectually oriented, they will give a long class and Kirtan will be very short. Like Jayarada Madhava, they will sing only once. One line is over, in 2 minutes it's over, and the class is 2.5 hours. Because we relish an intellectual discussion without giving enough emphasis on the Sankirtan. So, ours is a Sankirtan movement. The emphasis should be given on Sankirtan. It's very important. Especially in festivals especially those who are intellectually oriented should make extra effort to take part in Sankirtan. For example, in a pen, sometimes you keep a pen, you know, somebody pulls the, what do you call this? This thing of the pen, like this, you pull it. It comes out. So later on you try to make it like this to put it in your bag, it will never come to the normal position. Even when you press it, it will only come this much. So if you want it to come to the normal position, what you have to do? You have to remove that and do little extra. You bend it little extra. How many of you have done it? Experience of that? Isn't it? Little extra you do like this and then you put in, then it will fit properly. Similarly, if our tendency for intellectual jugglery is more, then we do little extra sankirtan only. Then what will happen? We can bring it to normal. Then only it is possible. In order to balance it. And deliberately take part in sankirtan. Although it may not be very tasty, you may wonder, you know, what is this simply sitting and doing kirtan? There is no philosophical discussion going on. No, that's not needed at the moment. You just take part in sankirtan. Go for Harinam. Take part in sankirtan. And then gradually that jnana will not cover our devotional tendencies. So, similarly this karma also, going for astrology or throughout the Shastra you will find innumerable codes. If you do this on this month, Kartik month, or if you do this on Bhishma Panchaka, you know, if you do this, you will get this fruits. If you do this, if you bow down like this, you will get this. If you stand up like this, you will get that. If you rotate now, Pradakshina, if you do, you will get this. If you visit this holy place on that particular time, and, you know, yeah. So, in fact, people, you know, very carefully note down. What did you say? What did they very carefully note down? Which month, what I should do, what benefit I can get. Actually, why the Shastra say this, there is a reason for this. Generally, the living entities are not very attracted to the program of Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya. They are not attracted. So, what the Shastras do, understanding the instant result mentality, Shastras give some regular but instant dosage of discounts. Regular but instant doses. For example, Diwali, 20% discount or 50% discount. They give in a cloth shop, like that. And then again, Sankranti. Then after that, you know, for every special festival, something will be given. Similarly, Shastra say this. You will find in Shastra, you know, every month there is something available. Why the Shastras are attracting people? That at least on that period you do something. Like people do Vijayadashami. On these 10 days people do take up some kind of thing. People take up. So the Shastras are giving such prescriptions. Do this and gain some advantage in a very short time. Like a shortcut program. Because everyone wants shortcuts. People don't want long cut. They don't want to. Actually long cut is what? Shravanam Kirtanam. And that will do Nashta Prayeshu, Abhadreshu, Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya. Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya, long term program. But to be, people don't want that, they give short term. But sometimes what happens, in the name of short term, people do some kind of, like you will find, Kartik month, people become suddenly very serious in devotional service. That 1 month, and they will compensate for the rest of the year. Similarly, you find Ekadashi in some temples on Ekadashi day, you find 300 people or 500 people for morning Mangalarti program. Suddenly you wonder, because they know that Ekadashi is a very special day. And other days, hardly anybody shows up. People don't come up like that. So Shastra say, okay, at least this person is doing this much. We have this karma tendencies, only we show sudden seriousness only in seasons, special seasons. Seasonal seriousness. So, sometimes these tendencies are dangerous also. Why? Like we found, Janmashtami, 1 lakh people come. How did they suddenly fall in love with Krishna so much? But they fall in love only once in a year. And they go to different places, similarly different temples. So, these are also arising from what tendency? Karma tendency. Attraction for astrology, this kind of things. Attraction for, like you, for example, in Calcutta temple, when I had gone, they were doing this, it was a festival, I think, something like Chaitanya Mahaprabhu 500th year, they were celebrating. Big crowd, some 2500, 3000 people had come. So they had made a yajna kund also, in one place. So they were chanting, Nama Om, Vishnupadaya, they were doing, and Swaha, you know. So many people are attracted, many well-wishers, donors, they come and sit on all sides of Yajna Kund and putting Swaha. They have more faith in Swaha than chanting Hare Krishna. you know. So even though they may not understand what is the meaning of that Sanskrit mantra being pronounced there, huh? They may not know. People have actually, yajna is actually meant for which age? Huh? Treta Yuga. Yeah. But in this age, people have more faith in the Vedic chant because it is high sounding. Yami mam pushpitam vacham. So no problem, in ISKCON they do Vaishnava Yajna. Okay, you like the sound, we will chant the same Mahamantra in your sound, which you like. You don't like Japa, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Swaha. So, this is also attachment to Jnana Karma Adi Anavritam. Anyway, we don't mind people coming and participating in Yajna and eventually becoming devotees slowly over a period of time. Yes, surely the Lord accepts the yajna also, but it is a very official way of offering worship to the Lord. Chanting japa is a direct, it's ashtama vibhati, which means directly you are calling Krishna. Hare Krishna, you are calling the divine couple. Hey Radha, hey Shyam, please engage me in your eternal devotional service. Some or other I have forgotten you and I have wandered away from you. This is a pure mantra, yugal naam, which can bestow Krishna prema directly in our heart. But people don't know the value of this mantra. So, Prabhupada says these are all mixed devotees. Just like, for example, Jnana Karma Adi. Adi means what? Adi, many other things like yoga or renunciation, detachment. This is counted as Adi. Or developing saintly qualities. See, developing saintly qualities like Brahmacharya or Ahimsa. These kind of qualities are good, but they are not directly related to devotional service. Somebody is following Ahimsa or Brahmacharya or Shaucham, cleanliness. That will not produce devotional service. But devotional service will produce these qualities. Ahimsa, Shaucham and all. Like for example, clean people are not pure devotees. But pure devotees are clean. Correct? If you are saying all clean people are pure devotees, then all the software engineers, you have to give them award as pure devotees. Software companies are kept so spick and span, you go and see. So all clean people are not pure devotees, but pure devotees are clean. Similarly, all saintly people are not Krishna Bhaktas, but Krishna Bhaktas are saintly. Like that they say. So, we should not aspire for these qualities independent of Krishna. We should aspire for being. Some people say, oh, this Prabhuji, this Mataji, they are so sweet, they are so kind, they are so loving, they are so gentle, they are so polite, they are so respectful. All this is good, but not without Krishna. Without Krishna, these are simply like Mandanam Lokaranjanam. Bhagavad Bhakti Hinasya Jati Shastram Japastapa Apranasyeva Dehasya Mandanam Lokaranjanam. Yes, it is true, developing saintly qualities may help us to become better devotees. Because that is, it's like, you know, if you are in mode of goodness, you stand a good chance to go to pure goodness very easily. But mode of goodness alone doesn't give you any assurance or promise that you will become a devotee of Krishna. There are so many people in India who are pious materialists. They remain pious materialists. They never become devotees at all. So, that is why you see, Lord Chaitanya is also doing a karma ritual. How? He is going to Prayag Dham, Gaya. He is going to Gaya. For what? Performing the Shraddha ceremony for his father. Now, doing Shraddha is also coming under this karma. If somebody wants to do the puja, vidhi and all Shraddha using a typical Vedic Brahmana, that is coming under this karma activity. But what did Lord Chaitanya do when he went to Gaya? That is the time he went to that Vishnupadi temple where he met his spiritual master Ishwarapuri and took initiation from him. So his going to Gaya was only an excuse to tell his mother, I am going to Gaya for performing Shraddha for the father. But his actual intention was what? To perform devotional service. To take initiation from his spiritual master. Similarly, we also can do such things. Like, you know, your parents are celebrating some big yajna at home. They are calling. You may go and then you may take it as an advantage to preach to all the people by giving them a Bhagavad Gita. Each of them and giving a small discourse on Bhagavad Gita. One can take advantage of all the ritualistic ceremonies to promote devotional service. Then it is wonderful. And then Prabhupada says, the pure devotees are free from all these mixtures and are completely absorbed in the service of the Lord, regardless of how and where they are situated. What is the meaning of this how and where? They may be like Narada boy, born in a maidservant's home. Or they may be, you know, millionaires, or they may be kings of the world like Ambarish. Wherever they are situated, they are completely absorbed in the service of the Lord. Pure devotees of the Lord are not enthusiastic to put aside their services to the Lord in order to go to visit holy places of pilgrimage. In fact, Narottama Das Thakur says, visiting holy place of pilgrimage is another bewilderment of the mind, he says. Because devotion service to the Lord at any place is the last word in spiritual perfection. Which means, Srila Prabhupada is directly discouraging in this purport, you know, visiting holy places. So it's a very important point. This is coming in Prabhupada's mood and mission. See, we have to know the mood and mission of the Acharya, which is, you know, manifesting in different purports of the Acharya when you read. Like, you know, Tishtan Braje, Tadanuragi Jana Anugami Kalam Nayeda Kilamit Upadesha Saram. This is said by whom? Rupa Goswami. Tishtan Braje, stay in Vrindavan. And Prabhupada saying, don't go to holy place. So, how do we reconcile these two statements? Bhaksan Sarati said, after you develop a firm attachment to Krishna, and after you develop a develop a taste for constantly hearing about Krishna, then you should go to the holy place, and he says you should stay in the dham and serve in the dham, like the Bhaksan Sarati writes in one of his letters. He says that. And Srila Prabhupada says, you know, he says that even if you go to dham, your heart should be fixed on the instructions of your guru. And then Prabhupada is giving his own example. He says, I was staying in Radha Damodar in Vrindavan Dham, but what was I doing? I was writing books on the order of my spiritual master, and I was preparing to go abroad for preaching. Even though I was staying in the dham, my activity was one of, you know, preaching the mission. So Prabhupada says, it's better for you to follow Chaitanya Mahaprabhu instead of Haridas Thakur. Like the Prabhupada says, you know, Haridas Thakur is a great soul, but you can't imitate him. Better you follow Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who says, Yare Dekho Tare Kaho, Krishna Upadesh, Amaragya Guru Haya Tare Idesh. Prabhupada says, you better follow Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he says. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu himself preached. He didn't go and stay in Vrindavan Dham. He himself went to South India. He himself went through Jharkhand. He preached everywhere he went. All over India he went and preached. So he do that, Prabhupada says, about preaching. In fact, there is a beautiful pastime in Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's dealings with Jagadananda Pandit. One time, you all know Jagadananda Pandit, pastime we were discussing some time ago. He is a very close associate of the Lord, Satyabhama, in the role of Jagadananda Pandit. So he was giving a lot of comforts and enjoyable paraphernalia for Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and Mahaprabhu was always trying to escape. At one time, Jagadananda Pandit came to Mahaprabhu and said, my dear Lord, I have a great aspiration to visit Vrindavan Dham. So Mahaprabhu told them, if you at all want to go to Vrindavan Dham, you should not go alone. You should go with some very advanced devotee. And you should never stay in Vrindavan alone. You should always stay in the association of very advanced devotees. As far as you are concerned, he said, go to Vrindavan, associate with Sanatana Goswami, and never leave his association while you are there. And he also said, do not stay for a very long time. Stay for a short while and leave and come back here, he said. Also he said, in Vrindavan, the Vijabhasis, you know, they have a very inconceivable type of spontaneous affection for Krishna. So their activities and behavior are very inconceivable, and you are likely to judge them, misunderstand them, and offend them. That is a possibility. That is why even when you go to Vrindavan, you should stay in the association of some great Vaishnava who will show you the Dham, who will reveal the Dham, who will protect you while living in the Dham. And so he gave him a warning like this. And he said, while you are in Vrindavan, do not do any prajalpa. And safeguard your consciousness. And then safely come back. He told them. This is the instruction he gave. When I read this instruction, I was so happy because, you know, joining Brahmacharya Ashram is not only the goal. But some people think, you know, if I am not out, like in a cricket game, you are not out and you keep on batting, but you don't make any score and you don't get out also. You know, is it a very glorious thing? You know, similarly, somebody says, hey, I have passed 1 year, I have passed 2 years, I have passed 5 years. So remaining not out is not the goal of Brahmacharya Ashram. When we are in Brahmacharya Ashram, we have to learn to cultivate a proper type of Vaishnava mentality and also elevate ourselves. Similarly, going to Vrindavan is not just you take a ticket and you go to Vrindavan and say, I have been to Vrindavan. Many people think we'll go to Vrindavan for sightseeing. We just go around. Actually, all over India people come for Govardhan Parikrama. Many families come. Some people come for Banki Bihari Darshan and all that. Simply going to Vrindavan and going around and coming back doesn't elevate one so much. It may elevate a little bit, but not so much. Actually, when we go to Vrindavan, we have to, the purpose of going to Vrindavan is to elevate our consciousness, and for that these conditions should be understood, what Lord Chaitanya told Jagadanand Pandit. And then Jagadanand Pandit heard all these rules of Mahaprabhu very carefully, and he proceeded to Vrindavan. There he went straight to Sanatana Goswami. And Sanatana Goswami welcomed him in Gokul Mahavan. Sanatana Goswami has a cave. So he took him inside and he gave him place to stay, and he took very good care of him. And every day Sanatana Goswami would come out and he would go for Govardhan Parikrama. And very close to that cave, there was a temple where they would give charity to the sadhus. Of rice and sabji, uncooked. They would give raw ones, and then he can accept from there, and then he can bring and cook. So sometimes Jagannath Pandit would go and bring from the temple. Sometimes Sanatana Goswami would go and bring, and then give it to him, and then they would cook, and then they would take prasad. So one day, Sanatana Goswami and Jagannath Pandit said, come, let's go to the temple. They both went there. And then they returned back, and then Jagannath Pandit cooked. And Sanatana Goswami at that time was wearing a beautiful red turban over his head. And Jagannath Pandit saw that cloth and immediately remembered Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And he thought that Lord Mahaprabhu must have given as a gift to Sanatana Goswami. He knew that. But still he inquired from Sanatana simply so that, you know, he will get to hear the glories of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So he asked him, oh Sanatana, you are wearing a beautiful turban on your head. Who gave this to you? And Sanatana said, oh, we go to the temple nearby. There is one Mukunda Saraswati, one sannyasi. So he gifted me. So I am wearing it, he said. Hearing the Jagannath Pandit became so angry. He picked up a cooking pot and lifted his arms and came running towards Sanatana to beat him. Because that Mukunda Saraswati was a Mayavadi. He was an impersonalist. And because Sanatana was wearing the cloth given by impersonalist, he became very angry. Sanatana was in great ecstasy. He said, Jagannath Pandit, if you do not reveal your love for Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in this way, then how can anybody in this world understand your glories? He asked him like that. I know that you are very loyal for Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And then immediately Jagannath Pandit became very shy. He put the pot down. And they both cried in great ecstasy, remembering the wonderful pastimes of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu subsequently while taking prasadam. But why I was telling you this pastime, see, Jagannath Pandit misunderstood Sanatana Goswami in a few moments. Similarly, when you go to Vrindavan, there is a possibility of misunderstanding, because in Vrindavan there are many attractive things and there are many bewildering things, both. You will hear very nice kirtans everywhere. Door to door you will find people will be doing kirtan everywhere. You will find darshans in so many temples. You will find everyone saying Radhe Radhe. You know, like many people think, if you go to Vrindavan, we can buy in any sweet shop and eat. Correct? Because people think that Vrindavan is pure and all. In one of the lectures I was hearing, many of the people who sell items in the Vrindavan shops, they make it originally in Mathura. If you go to Mathura, they have huge factories where they make a lot of these sweets and items and all. you know, many hundreds of people work making these eatables, but while making, some people smoke bidi also, saying Radhe Radhe, and they smoke a bidi and they make these items. And then our devotees are very innocent. They just go and buy in any shop. They think it's Braj. They are in a very transcendental mood. They eat from anyone's hands. So devotees should be very careful in going to Vrindavan. You know, criticizing the Vrajabasis is very risky. At the same time, becoming bewildered, there are shops there which have printed many books of Gaudiya Vaishnava Sampradaya which are not properly translated. Gopi Pranayana Prabhu is very unhappy. He was once telling, this is called as literary corruption, he said. Literary corruption means taking the Sanskrit literature of Gaudiya Vaishnavas and hurriedly, half-heartedly translating it to print books and make a lot of money. There are some shops which sell like that. And many of our ISKCON devotees, you know, innocently they go and buy those books. Oh, I got this book, I got that. That's why ISKCON is also fastly publishing now. Like Bhanu Maharaj and Gopi Pranayana Prabhu, they are all bringing out books. Why? Because Gopi Pranayana Prabhu is bringing out very pure literature, Brihad Bhagavatamrita type of literature, thoroughly edited by people like Jayadutt Swami and all. But there are shops there which are in a mood of money making, and they bring out books, you know, Jiva Sandarbha, this Sandarbha and everything, and we buy from them, and we can get bewildered actually when we read them because they don't translate properly. Because the translation is not done by authentic learned Vaishnavas. So they give a half-hearted understanding they give. So this is also danger when you go to the Dham. That is why our Sarva Brahma Prabhu used to say, Vrindavan means, you know, 100% devotion, 99% deviation. Used to say like that. 100% devotion, 99% deviation. Somebody is singing Nitya Gaur, Radhe Shyam, Hare Krishna, Hare Ram, they are chanting. All kinds of people. So there are Sahajiyas, there are Radhakund Babajis. People may be speaking on Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. If you see in Vrindavan, boards will be there. You know, Bhagavat Jnana Samaroh. Like that they write. If the word Jnana is there, they are Mayavadis. Although they may be giving lectures on Bhagavat Katha. Srimad Bhagavat Jnana Samaroh. If you find that, they are Mayavadis. They will speak on Krishna Leela, but give a Mayavad conclusion. In Vrindavan. So there are a lot of dangers in going to the holy place. So Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu warned Jagadananda Pandit in those days, 500 years ago, not to go to the holy places. That is why in that beautiful song, Shuddha Bhakta Charana Renu, we sing, you know, Gaura Amara Sesabastana Korilo Brahmana Range Sesabastana Heribo Ami Pranayi Bhakata Sange Shuddha Bhakata Charana Renu Bhajana Anukula. See what it says? Gaura Amar Sesabastane Korila Brahmana Range. And Sesabastane, all the holy spots. How will I visit? Sesabastane Heribo means I will see. How can I see the holy spots? Heribo Ami Pranayi Bhakata Sange. When you go with Bhakta Sangha, with the association of devotees to the holy places, then they will reveal the holy spots to me and I will be able to see properly. And that is the method of visiting Vrindavan. Otherwise, no use. Simply, a devotee going alone. Even when we go to Mayapur or Vrindavan ourselves, and we stay alone, we find so many faults. Because we have a tendency to find fault. And even, see, the problem in Dham is, Vrindavan Dham, you know, whatever you do, it gets magnified 1,000 times. And generally, we find faults more easily. That means what happened? Then aparadha become multiplied 1,000 times. If you have a tendency to behave purely, always, then going to Dham is very advantageous. Is it not true? See, for example, if a devotee, wherever he looks around, a devotee sees only good in others. A devotee always glorifies other devotees. A devotee completely ignores the bad side of other devotees. A devotee doesn't see materially at all. A devotee has, eyes are laden with love. He simply sees, you know, Krishna everywhere. Then such a devotee going to Vrindavan Dham is very good. Because whatever the devotee is going to do will get multiplied 1,000 times. But a neophyte going to Vrindavan Dham, it's very risky business. We may get caught. That is why Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu warned Jagadananda. Why Jagadananda warned? Because Jagadananda Pandit had a tendency to find fault. The devotee is very, of course, he's a pure soul, he's a very advanced devotee, as a leela he is behaving and the way he behaves. But Mahaprabhu gave a warning to him. He said, if you go to Vrindavan, you will find fault with Vrijavasis, which is not good for you. Your softness of heart, your love for Krishna, which is actually very soft and tender, and that will get hardened. Your heart will become hard by finding faults. In this way, you will lose the most valuable, rare, priceless jewel of Krishna Prem we have in our heart by going to Vrindavan. That is why the warning is given here. See what Prabhupada is saying. The pure devotees are free from all these mixtures and are completely absorbed in service of the Lord. Okay. Pure devotees of the Lord are not enthusiastic to put aside their service to the Lord in order to go to visit holy places of pilgrimage. Which means Prabhupada said, yes, you can go to Vrindavan, Mayapur. Why? Because you go there, you get the juice, get inspired and then come back to your respective places and then you preach. That was Prabhupada's plan in making temples in Mayapur and Vrindavan. For pure devotees of the Lord who are completely satisfied with the transcendental loving service of the Lord, there is hardly any necessity to visit the various places of pilgrimage. But those who are not so advanced have the prescribed duties of visiting pilgrimage sites and regularly performing the rituals. That means he says neophytes should go to holy places, he says. An advanced devotee should preach, he is saying like that. This is what he is saying here. Because some people, like whenever we go for yatras, some people are very enthusiastic. Are they enthusiastic to learn the glories of the Lord is a slightly question mark. Because this year in South India Yatra, one senior devotee was telling that they had about 3,500 names. But then they included one place, which is Kanyakumari, where you can see the sunset. After that, suddenly 2,000 names increased more. They are telling, are they coming for sunset of Kanyakumari or, or the Katha? He was asking one devotee. So, sometimes people are more eager to see the places than to hear the Katha. Actually, you all know this pastime of Prabhupada in Koshi. When announcement was made, some people can go to take darshan of Sheshashayi, Vishnu, or you can stay back and hear our spiritual master Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati giving a lecture. And what did our A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada prefer? He stayed behind and he heard. Because he thought, what will I see? Even if I go there, I don't have the eyes to see. I don't have the wisdom to see. I don't have the eyes of love to see. So better let me hear my guru, he heard. So, unless we hear and awaken our love for Krishna, our seeing doesn't have much meaning. So, when we go for yatras, the prime purpose of yatra is, there are many purposes in yatra. One purpose is that we get associated with the spiritual master very closely. The close association with Guru is to hear him attentively with love and devotion and faith in his words and see his ecstasy in Krishna consciousness and appreciate that and develop our love for Krishna also. Another purpose is to associate with our equals and our seniors and juniors. By visiting the holy spots, we can ask them so many questions and we can share our realizations with others and hear their realizations. Another third purpose is to throw away all our busy engagements of preaching all the time, which sometimes it makes us feel like running out of fuel. And go to the yatra, in which time we completely, 24 hours, we absorb in bhajan, in shravan, kirtan and bhajan, in worship. And it gives us chance to, keep our anxieties here in Pune and go to another place with all devotees. So we don't carry our anxieties with us at all. So we can just absorb in devotion fully. And also another purpose is, when you go to the holy places, like you take a dip in the holy waters like Pavan Sarovar, Yamuna, Vrindavan, visiting this kind of holy spots, they've got inbuilt potential spiritual content in them. By taking dip in the holy rivers and taking darshan of the special deities there, which were worshipped by great acharyas in the past, like Ramanuja has worshipped Ranganatha. Similarly, when we take darshan of those special deities and hear their significance and wonderful pastimes, similarly when we take dip in the holy rivers, those are all like it's like a embassy of the spiritual world. It's like spiritual world descending down. By going and touching those parts and putting our head on the ground and rolling on the ground, we pick up some spiritual substance which clings to us. When we come back, when we go to those places, we get electrified in spiritual life, surcharged in spiritual life. Then we will have more spiritual strength to, you know, be able to stably practice Krishna consciousness and distribute to others. When you go to these places. Yeah. And also, we have a tendency for picnicking tendency. Picnic tendency to go to some new place. Like, you know, our mind as it is here, let me go to some new place which I have not seen. Let me meet some new people. Let me have some variety in life. Okay. So the acharyas are so merciful, they have arranged spiritual picnics. Okay, you want to wander around in Krishna's zone. And that also you gain some advantage. People think, oh, we will pack some prasadam, we will take some dress and we will stay here in new place and we will move from place to place in bus. We can peep out of the window and watch everything, you know, beautiful. Okay, so we can dovetail that tendency in advancing in Krishna consciousness. So very kindly, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati also used to take for yatras and tours. So Prabhupada did it and our special masters in ISKCON, they do it also. So one should not go to the holy place for simply picnicking or just for sightseeing. One should understand the real goal. Yattirtha buddhi salilena kavichet janesha abhigyesha saeva gokarha. If simply one goes to a holy place, goes round and round, you know, without hearing any katha and awakening attraction to Krishna, then such a person is compared to a cow or an ass in this world. So one should know the purpose of the pilgrimages to the holy places. Grantra Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Srila Prabhupada ki, Gaur Bhakta Vrinda ki. Thank you very much. Krishna Chanaja Garvahari Gaurabha Pitanam Chita Jaganda Kirti Nindi Saurabha. सकुमार्य श्रेष्ठ पल्ल वाल्मीकि ग्रह चंद्रकुंड
Thank you. Thank you.